Thank you very much. It occurs to me that if you're the last person to speak at a conference, the organisers are trying to do one of two things. One is make sure you're speaking at the end because everybody will have gone home by then, or try and wake everybody up so that they catch the bus so that they can go home. What I realise is speaking at the end is almost everything I was going to say has already been said, either in the talks that have been given or in the questions that have come from the floor, the discussion. We're next for ombudsman schemes. And I'm going to look at that in terms of the place of the ombudsman in administrative and civil justice, and look at it in four different ways, using four different words: streamline, harmonise, rationalise, and precedent. Increasingly, using administrative and civil courts and tribunals is not a viable option for citizens and consumers. The Wolf reforms, for example, as implemented, mean that mediation and other forms of ADR should at least be considered or attempted before proceeding to the judicial process. The drastic cuts effected in legal aid mean that the risks of using courts and tribunals are greater, with complainants choosing to represent themselves in unfamiliar arenas, leading to cases taking longer and with far greater possibilities of failure. Introducing an upfront payment to access tribunals has already, for example, cut the number of cases going to employment tribunals in parts of England by up to 70%. The whole process has been described as the privatisation of civil and administrative justice. And the potential, has been said so often today, the potential for rationalising and improving administrative justice has been considerably weakened by the abolition or the sacrifice of the Administrative Justice and Tribunals Council. This is the context in which ombudsmen are now operating. Administrative and civil justice, as provided by the state, it can be argued, I think, is moving from a period of anxiety into a period of crisis. Access to justice is difficult and for many effectively denied. At the same time, the reviews that we heard by PASC and the Cabinet Office and the EU directive on ADR mean that both public and private sector ombudsman schemes in the UK are under intense scrutiny. So as practitioners, what are we to do next? Whither the ombudsman enterprise? Can ombudsmen fill the vacuum now created? Can we provide the necessary access to justice, ensuring that individuals are properly heard, that the evidence is appropriately scrutinised, and that the result is fair? And can we compensate somehow for the loss of that crucial role of the courts to set precedence? So first of all, streamline access. At the moment, even if someone knows an ombudsman exists, finding the right one is not easy. Google ombudsman and you see a plethora of schemes and addresses, including those who are kind of ombudsman watch schemes. Should we not now be following the example of some other European countries and seeing whether we can at least consider ways of having a single point of entry, a single portal, a single point of contact? Why should the consumer or the citizen have to search? So could we have that single point of entry? Or at the very least, mechanisms for transfer if an individual finds themselves with the wrong ombudsman? The individual surely only needs to know that they can take their concern to the ombudsman, contact via a single portal or by their preferred means, have their complaint recorded to a standard acceptable to all the schemes, and then packaged up and delivered to the appropriate body. Secondly, ombudsmen don't traditionally advertise, beginning to do it more as we've learned from FOS. The received wisdom has been that a complainant only needs to know about their right to go to an ombudsman when they've complained to the organisation and remain dissatisfied. At that point, it's up to the organisation to pass on the necessary information. A recent Ofgem study on ombudsman services revealed that customers are much more likely to use an ombudsman, to go to the energy ombudsman, if they knew that an ombudsman exists before they have the complaint. And Ofgem has now laid a responsibility on ombudsman services and the companies to heighten awareness of the ombudsman scheme. So should ombudsmen advertise their presence and their services. The Ofgem survey and another one conducted by Ofcom show that only 5 and 7% respectively of eligible complaints are escalated to the independent body. 5 in Ofgem, 7 in Ofcom, energy and communications complaints. People don't take it further because they don't know about the schemes, they don't know how to access the schemes, they think it'll be too complicated, they just don't know what to expect. The Financial Ombudsman, in their annual report of 2012-13, said that something like 45%, and you can correct me if I've got this wrong, 45% of the total figure of complaints they'd received came from complaints management companies. But since advertising their presence, as we've heard earlier, more than they have been, then that number has come down and people are coming more directly to the Financial Ombudsman Service than they did before. And if we do advertise, should that be left to individual schemes themselves, or should we do it as a collective? Is it a job for the Ombudsman Association, for example, to say, this is an ombudsman, this is what to expect, this is how to contact us? Is it something for the association or some overall body to advertise the ombudsman brand and help people know and understand what it is? Secondly, rationalise and complete the landscape. The EU ADR directive requires that each member state ensures ADR entities are available for all contracts for the supply of goods and services within the EU. If they are there, then civil justice can be made available. Currently within the United Kingdom, there are gaps and there are overlaps. The BIS consultation asks whether the residual body can cover the gaps. But can such a generalist body fill such a role? One of the key features of ombudsman schemes is that we provide not only specialisms in investigation and redress, but also we have access to specialist technical knowledge that helps us come to fair and reasoned conclusions. And the overlaps, the recent DCLG process to approve ombudsmen for lettings and managing agents was conducted on the basis that, contrary to Cabinet Office guidance, as many competing ADR bodies as can survive is a good thing and will drive standards up and prices down. But as long as it's the bodies that are under jurisdiction that can choose, then as prices fall, so do standards. And where companies can choose, the independence of the ombudsman is sacrificed. Have competition, yes, but not competition with the body run by bodies under jurisdiction. If there is competition, as Steve has said earlier, that competition must be run by some sort of body like the regulator or the trade association, not by the individual companies who can then play one ombudsman scheme off against another. And we have evidence in Canada just about how that has affected redress in the financial sector. The danger in the implementation of the ADR directive is that we could end up with a plethora of ombudsmen, increasing competition, yes, but also increasing confusion and reducing rather than increasing access to resolution and redress. It has been suggested, and we've heard it today already, that England perhaps could have only 3 private sector ombudsmen, something like a financial ombudsman, a legal or professional ombudsman, and a consumer ombudsman. An independent Scotland has already declared it will have 1 consumer ombudsman. And other EU countries are also looking at the possibility of a single consumer ombudsman. Harmonising standards and processes. Ombudsman schemes within the UK already operate to the same principles and are validated in these by the Ombudsman Association. The ADR expands on these, and private ADR entities will be subject to the scrutiny of a competent authority or competent authorities. It will look odd, I think, if the public sector ombudsman adopt a lower standard. A common purpose, a common set of ideals. But can we take it further? Is it possible, for example, for different ombudsmen to follow the same basic processes? An Ombudsman Services survey that we conducted showed that people are 30% more likely to complain than they were a year ago. Ofgem and Ofcom are pushing to get an increase in the percentage of cases escalated to ADR. And the directive will increase the range of complaints that can be dealt with through ADR bodies. But people are more likely to complain again and again and again. Should their experience of using one ombudsman be different from that of using another? If we want to increase access to justice, is it not better that they know what to expect? We've heard earlier on about early resolution and how many different theories there are about what early resolution actually is. Well, is it not beyond our ability to say, this is early resolution, no matter what ombudsman you go to, this is what you should expect. This is investigation, no matter what ombudsman you go to, this is what to expect. This is resolution and redress, no matter what ombudsman you go to, this is what you should expect. Is it not possible that we as ombudsmen can actually get some sort of harmonisation of our processes and our standards? After all, what we're looking for is much the same, whether it's in the private sector or the public sector, and no matter what ombudsman. Maladministration and service failure, or poor customer service and a failure to fulfil a contractual obligation. They've left undone those things which they ought to have done, and they have done those things which they ought not to have done. Chris knows where that comes from. But can we not also share standards, as been suggested before, on quality, on timeliness, and on our own customer service? And that in turn begs the question of the recruitment and development of staff. Has the time come to turn ombudsmanry into a profession with accredited training, transferable skills, and a clear career progression? Do you think the day will come when you go onto a comparison site for insurance and you're able to disclose the fact you are an ombudsman? Because at the moment, you can't. And finally, precedence. Could an ombudsman replace the gap that's being left by the courts in setting some sort of precedent? Case law is built up through the courts and by the establishing of precedents. And this is an area where ombudsmen have no locus. While we take law, regulation, and legal decisions into account, it is not for us to interpret or to determine points of law. With the reduction in cases being heard by courts and tribunals, this essential element of our judicial system is weakened and the rule of law compromised. Is there anything ombudsmen can do to mitigate? Well, I think yes, in a limited but nonetheless influential way. By receiving, resolving, and investigating individual cases brought to us, we gain a unique knowledge. We can influence behaviour and decision-making by publishing what we find, by feeding back on poor performance, by issuing guidance on how to improve. Public sector ombudsmen may be given the power to conduct own initiative investigations. Private sector ombudsmen can report systemic failure to the relevant regulator, professional body, or trade association, recommending investigation and change and influencing policy. The changes in administrative and civil justice within the UK are weakening these judicial systems, reducing access to justice for many people, and undermining the building up of case law. We have reason to be anxious. Is it time to recognise that the Ombudsman is no longer an alternative to the courts, but an essential and integral part of the justice system? As such, is it time for ombudsmen to come of age, to lift our public profile so that people know who we are and what we are, to simplify access for those using our schemes, to harmonise processes and standards so that members of the public know what to expect, to create a professional workforce that is recognised and accredited, and to publicise and feed back our findings to influence and change policy and practice. I think this may be the age of the ombudsman.